Chapter 43. Livy and I join in the warmest regards to you and yours, ears ever, Mark. Longfellow, in his reply, said, I do not believe anybody was much hurt. Certainly I was not, and Holmes tells me he was not. So I think you may dismiss the matter from your mind without further remorse. Holmes wrote, it never occurred to me for a moment to take offense, or feel wounded by your playful use of my name. Miss Ellen Emerson replied for her father in a letter to Mrs. Clemens that the speech had made no impression upon him, giving at considerable length the impression it had made on herself and other members of the family. Clearly, it was not the principals who were hurt, but only those who held them in awe, though one can realize that this would not make it much easier for Mark Twain. XVIII. Letters from Europe, 1878-79. Tramping with Twitchell. Writing a new travel book. Life in Munich. Whether the unhappy occurrence at the Whittier dinner had anything to do with Mark Twain's resolve to spend a year or two in Europe cannot be known now. There were other good reasons for going, one in particular being a demand for another book of travel. It was also true, as he explains in a letter to his mother, that his days were full of annoyances, making it difficult for him to work. He had a tendency to invest money in almost any glittering enterprise that came along, and at this time he was involved in the promotion of a variety of patent rights that brought him no return other than assessment and vexation. Clemens' mother was by this time living with her son Onion and his wife, in Iowa. To Mrs. Jane Clemens, in Keokuk, Iowa. Hartford, February 17, 1878. My dear mother, I suppose I am the worst correspondent in the whole world, and yet I grow worse and worse all the time. My conscience blisters me for not writing you, but it has ceased to abuse me for not writing other folks. Life has come to be a very serious matter with me. I have a badgered, harassed feeling, a good part of my time. It comes mainly of business responsibilities and annoyances, and the persecution of kindly letters from well-meaning strangers, to whom I must be rudely silent, or else put in the biggest half of my time bothering over answers. There are other things also that help to consume my time and defeat my projects. Well, the consequence is, I cannot write a book at home. This cuts my income down. Therefore, I have about made up my mind to take my tribe and fly to some little corner of Europe and budge no more until I shall have completed one of the half dozen books that lie begun, upstairs. Please say nothing about this at present. We propose to sail the 11th of April. I shall go to Fredonia to meet you, but it will not be well for Livy to make that trip, I am afraid. However, we shall see. I will hope she can go. Mr. Twitchell has just come in, so I must go to him. We are all well, and send love to you all. Affably, Sam. He was writing few letters at this time, and doing but little work. There were always many social events during the winter, and what with his European plans, and a diligent study of the German language, which the entire family undertook, his days and evenings were full enough. Howells wrote protesting against the European travel and berating him for his silence. Never was in Berlin, and don't know any family hotel there. I should be glad I didn't, if it would keep you from going. You deserve to put up with the sign of the savage in Vienna. Really, it's a great blow to me to hear of that prospected sojourn. It's a shame. I must see you, somehow, before you go. I'm in dreadfully low spirits about it. Was afraid your silence meant something wicked. Clemens replied promptly, urging a visit to Hartford, adding a postscript for Mrs. Howells, characteristic enough to warrant preservation. P.S. to Mrs. Howells, in Boston. February 78. Dear Mrs. Howells, Mrs. Clemens wrote you a letter, and handed it to me half an hour ago, while I was folding mine to Mr. Howells. I laid that letter on this table before me, while I added the paragraph about R.S. application. Since then I have been hunting and swearing and hunting, but I can't find a sign of that letter. It is the most astonishing disappearance I ever heard of. Mrs. Clemens has gone off driving, so I will have to try and give you an idea of her communication from memory. Mainly it consisted of an urgent desire that you come to see us next week, if you can possibly manage it, for that will be a reposeful time, the turmoil of breaking up beginning the week after. She wants you to tell her about Italy, and advise her in that connection, if you will. Then she spoke of her plans, hers, mind you, for I never have anything quite so definite as a plan. She proposes to stop a fortnight and confound the place, I've forgotten what it was. Then go and live in Dresden till sometime in the summer, then retire to Switzerland for the hottest season, then stay a while in Venice and put in the winter in Munich. This program subject to modifications according to circumstances. She said something about some little by trips here and there, but they didn't stick in my memory, because the idea didn't charm me. They have just telephoned me from the current office, that Bayard Taylor and family have taken rooms in our ship, the Alsatia, for the 11th April. Do come, if you possibly can. And remember and don't forget, to avoid letting Mrs. Clemens find out I lost her letter. Just answer her the same, as if you had got it. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. The Howellses came, as invited, for a final reunion before the breaking up. This was in the early half of March. The Clemenses were to sail on the 11th of the following month. Orion Clemens, meantime, had conceived a new literary idea, and was piling in his MS. As fast as possible to get his brother's judgment on it before the sailing date. It was not a very good time to send MS. But Mark Twain seems to have read it, and given it some consideration. He Journey in Heaven, of his own, which he mentions, was the story published, so many years later under the title of Apton Stormfield's Visit to Heaven. He had begun it in 1868, on his voyage to San Francisco, it having been suggested by conversations with Captain Ned Wakeman, of one of the Pacific steamers. Wakeman also appears in Roughing It, apostrophe chap. L, as Captain Ned Blakely, and again in one of the ambling notes of An Idle Excursion, as Apton Hurricane Jones. To Orion Clemens, in Keokuk. Hartford, MCH. 23, 1878. My dear bro. Every man must learn his trade, not pick it up. God requires that he learn it by slow and painful processes. The apprentice dash hand, in blacksmithing, in medicine, in literature, in everything, is a thing that can't be hidden. It always shows. But happily there is a market for apprentice work, else the Nocent's abroad would have had no sale. Happily too, there's a wider market for some sorts of apprentice literature than there is for the very best of journey work. This work of yours is exceedingly crude, but I am free to say it is less crude than I expected it to be, and considerably better work than I believed you could do. It is too crude to offer to any prominent periodical, so I shall speak to the NY Weekly people. To publish it there will be to bury it. Why could not same good genius have sent me to the NY Weekly with my apprentice sketches? You should not publish it in book form at all for this reason. It is only an imitation of Verne, it is not a burlesque. But I think it may be regarded as proof that Verne cannot be burlesqued. In accompanying notes I have suggested that you vastly modify the first visit to hell and leave out the second visit altogether. Nobody would or ought to print those things. You are not advanced enough in literature to venture upon a matter requiring so much practice. Let me show you what a man has got to go through. 9 years ago I mapped out my Ernie in Heaven. I discussed it with literary friends whom I could trust to keep it to themselves. I gave it a deal of thought, from time to time. After a year or more I wrote it up. It was not a success. 5 years ago I wrote it again, altering the plan. That MS is at my elbow now. It was a considerable improvement on the first attempt, but still it wouldn't do. Last year and year before, I talked frequently with Howells about the subject, and he kept urging me to do it again. So I thought and thought, at odd moments, and at last I struck what I considered to be the right plan. Mind, I have never altered the ideas. From the first, the plan was the difficulty. When Howells was here last, I laid before him the whole story without referring to my MS, and he said, "You have got it sure this time. But drop the idea of making mere magazine stuff of it. Don't waste it. Print it by itself, publish it first in England, ask Dean Stanley to endorse it, which will draw some of the teeth of the religious press, and then reprint in America. I doubt my ability to get Dean Stanley to do anything of the sort, but I shall do the rest, and this is all a secret which you must not divulge. Now look here, I have tried, all these years, to think of some way of doing hell too, and have always had to give it up. Hell, in my book, will not occupy 5 pages of MS. I judge it will be only covert hints, I suppose, and quickly dropped. I may end by not even referring to it. And mind you, in my opinion, you will find that you can't write up hell, so it will stand printing. Neither Howells nor I believe in hell, or the divinity of the Savior, but no matter, the Savior is nonetheless a sacred personage, and a man should have no desire or disposition to refer to him lightly, profanely, or otherwise than with the profoundest reverence. The only safe thing is not to introduce him, or refer to him at all, I suspect. I have entirely rewritten one book 3, perhaps 4 times, changing the plan every time. 1200 pages of MS. Wasted and burned, and shall tackle it again, one of these years, and maybe succeed at last. Therefore you need not expect to get your book right the first time. Go to work, and revamp or rewrite it. God only exhibits his thunder and lightning at intervals, and so they always command attention. These are God's adjectives. You thunder and lightning too much, the reader ceases to get under the bed, by and by. Mr. Perkins will send you and my your checks when we are gone. But don't write him, ever, except a single line in case he forgets the checks, for the man is driven to death with work. I see you are half promising yourself a monthly return for your book. In my experience, previously counted chickens never do hatch. How many of mine I have counted, and never a one of them but failed. It is much better to hedge disappointment by not counting. Unexpected money is a delight. The same sum is a bitterness when you expected more. My time in America is growing mighty short. Perhaps we can manage in this way. Imprimis, if the NY Weekly people know that you are my brother, they will turn that fact into an advertisement, a thing of value to them, but not to you and me. This must be prevented. I will write them a note to say you have a friend near Keokuk, Charles S. Miller, who has a MS for sale which you think is a pretty clever travesty on Verne, and if they want it, they might write to him in your care. Then if any correspondence ensues between you and them, let Molly write for you and sign your name, your own handwriting representing Miller's. Keep yourself out of sight till you make a strike on your own merits. There is no other way to get a fair verdict upon your merits. Later I've written the note to Smith, and with nothing in it which he can use as an advertisement. I'm called goodbye love to you both. We leave here next Wednesday for Elmira. We leave there at 9 or 10 and sail 11 here, bro. Sam. In the letter that follows, the mention of Annie and Sam refers, of course, to the children of Mrs. Moffat, who had been Pamela Clemens. They were grown now, and Annie Moffat was married to Charles 50 Webster, who later was to become Mark Twain's business partner. The Moffats and Websters were living in Fredonia at this time, and Clemens had been to pay them a goodbye visit. The Taylor dinner mentioned was a farewell banquet given to Bayard Taylor, who had been appointed minister to Germany, and was to sail on the ship with Mark Twain. Mark Twain's mother was visiting in Fredonia when this letter was written. To Mrs. Jane Clemens, in Fredonia. April 7, 78. My dear mother, I have told Livy all about Annie's beautiful house, and about Sam and Charlie, and about Charlie's ingenious manufactures and his strong manhood and good promise, and how glad I am that he and Annie married. And I have told her about Annie's excellent housekeeping, also about the great bacon conflict. I told you it was 100-1, that neither Livy nor the European powers had heard of that desolating struggle. And I have told her how beautiful you are in your age, and how bright your mind is with its old-time brightness, and how she and the children would enjoy you. And I have told her how singularly young Pamela is looking, and what a fine large fellow Sam is, and how ill the lingering syllable my to his name fits his portant figure. Well, Pamela, after thinking it over for a day or so, I came near inquiring about a stateroom in our ship for Sam, to please you, but my wiser former resolution came back to me. It is not for his good that he have friends in the ship. His conduct in the bacon business shows that he will develop rapidly into a manly man as soon as he is cast loose from your apron strings. You don't teach him to push ahead and do and dare things for himself, but you do just the reverse. You are assisted in your damaging work by the tyrannous ways of a village. Villagers watch each other, and so make cowards of each other. After Sam shall have voyaged to Europe by himself, and rubbed against the world and taken, and returned its cuffs, do you think he will hesitate to escort a guest into any whiskey mill in Fredonia, when he himself has no sinful business to transact there? No, he will smile at the idea. If he avoids this courtesy now from principle, of course I find no fault with it at all. Only if he thinks it is principle, he may be mistaken. A close examination may show it is only a bowing to the tyranny of public opinion. I only say it may, I cannot venture to say it will. Hartford is not a large place, but it is broader than to have ways of that sort. 3 or 4 weeks ago, at a Moody and Sankey meeting, the preacher read a letter from somebody, exposing the fact that a prominent clergyman had gone. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.